Welcome to episode 24 of Eye on Horror, or if you would rather, season 2, episode 2. And I messed that up last week. I called it episode 22. It was actually 23. I nailed it this week, 24. I'm your host, James J. Edwards. And with me, as always, I can't get rid of this guy, Jacob Davidson. How you doing, Jacob?
Feeling fine, James. All right, all right, all right.
All right, all right, all right. And also with us, who's not feeling all right, all right, all right, but he's going to rock through this with us, John Correa. How you doing, John?
Doing great. The muscle relaxants are starting to kick in again, so, you know.
Nice.
It's real fun. Nice.
Last episode was energy drinks, and this one it's muscle relaxants. Make up your mind.
Hey, you know, it's either I don't get enough sleep or I'm in a tremendous amount of pain with my back. So either way, I have to offset it with something. So no energy drinks, but I got a big thing of Earl Grey here, so that'll keep me
classy.
That'll keep me away. Yeah, woo, Earl Grey tea.
All right.
You know.
Cool. Let's dive right in. What are you guys seeing this week? What's been going on?
Well, I know we're not going to discuss it a whole lot, but I just saw Avengers Endgame.
Yes. Yeah, it's just tangentially horror, and we don't want to spoil anything. But
right.
I think we all saw Endgame, right?
Yes.
It's exactly the movie that fans deserve and want.
Yep.
From a second part to Infinity War. It's pretty awesome.
For most fans, but we're not here to discuss that. But I do want to discuss, obviously, everyone, you know, we're not big in spoiling stuff. We try to give movies some time before we, you know, get into the more spoily stuff on this podcast. And everyone on social media, when it came to Endgame, was like, don't spoil it for me. I'm going to block you. You know, of course, all that. Russo brothers said that come Monday, which is tomorrow for us, but last week for you guys, says spoilers are good to go. But, you know, I didn't have a problem with spoilers. My social media was very good. I am not on it often, so that helped too. But you know what kept nearly spoiling it for me? Google notifications. Google notifications on my phone kept being like, this character was taken out. Why did this character not make it to the end of Endgame? And then I'm like, no, stop. Or it'd be like,
yeah,
what?
Bullshit.
Why Avengers Endgame should be called Captain America? And I'm like, stop, stop. Why are you giving me notifications of this?
Have you guys seen those? There's a meme. It's out of context spoilers. And usually they do it for Game of Thrones. But they did one for Infinity War, and it's hilarious. And the way these spoilers work is they're only spoilers if you've seen the movie, because there's no context to them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just a random picture or something else.
Yeah. But when you know.
Yeah.
You know. So the Endgame one was hilarious, though. I loved it.
Yeah.
Though, speaking of Game of Thrones, who saw The Long Night last week?
Define saw. No. I saw it. I didn't have so much a problem with the darkness, because I understand that, hey, it was a battle in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
My problem was there was so much fog and snow, and I'm like, I think that was actually an aesthetic choice by the cinematographer.
Yeah.
They say the darkness was too, but the fog and sleet and all that.
Well, that was on purpose because, it was, without spoiling, it's kind of the nature of the battle.
Yeah. And I guess the cinematographer has been defending the darkness, saying, oh, no, that's how we wanted to have it. You know, here, adjust your TV. It's like, well, if you have to adjust your TV for a single episode of a show, but everything else looks fine, then maybe you should adjust your coloring or your, you know, but the darkness didn't so much bother me. Maybe my TV's adjusted correctly. But it was all of the fog and yeah, but I loved it. I wish I had seen the new Game of Thrones, and it won't be new by the time this posts. It'll be, you know, a couple episodes behind, but I wish I had seen The Long Night. I wish I had seen it in a movie theater with a crowd, because there were so many cheer-worthy moments. Did you see it, Korea?
I'm going to be that guy and let everyone know that I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen a single episode.
I've seen
it on social media.
Fuck all you guys for the stigma of people who don't watch Game of Thrones. Some of us don't have time to sit down and catch up on like 7 fucking seasons of like a medieval thing. I'm not saying I will never watch Game of Thrones. There's always a possibility. I've been saying that to fans of Lost for nearly a decade now. But no, I just haven't watched Game of Thrones, and I'm not going to be a dick about it. So don't be a dick about me not watching Game of Thrones. That's all I ask.
I showed up a little late to the Game of Thrones party. Like, you know, it was on its maybe third season. So I had some catching up to do. It took me three tries to actually get into it enough where I was invested. Because it's a weird show. It's a little like The Sopranos, where all of the characters kind of branch out and you have to follow all of them. But exponentially, because in Game of Thrones everyone ends up in a different freaking kingdom, and there's so many main characters, because all the characters are kind of main in Game of Thrones. So yeah, it took me a good three tries, but once you're hooked, you're hooked. So I think that you'll get over a hump when you start. It may take you a few tries though to get into it, but once you get over that hump, you will be a fan.
Yeah, like, it was the same thing with me. Like, after I graduated college, I finally had time to watch Game of Thrones, so I just sat down and binged, like, the first few seasons. But yeah, last night, though, with The Long Night, I feel like that was very much in the horror realm with the Whites, the undead Ice Army, and there was a couple scenes that made me flash back to the Resident Evil 2 remake, you know, with zombies, and
there was some From Dusk Till Dawn happening there.
Yeah.
there's often horror elements to Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
Just because I think it lends itself well to it. But you know, we'll see where it goes. There's still three episodes left, and I feel like The Dark Knight was The Long Night. I keep calling it The Dark Knight, like it's a Christopher Nolan joint.
You got Batman on the brain.
The Long Night felt like it should have been a season finale or a series finale, but there's still three episodes.
Yep.
You know, and I know that they still have some loose ends to tie up, but it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
I gave up on Walking Dead a long time ago, but I'm still all in on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I mean, only three episodes left. Might as well see how it goes.
I'm going to use this as a moment to plug in. Into the Badlands is really cool for those people who are dicks and don't want to watch Game of Thrones and are real dicks about it. Watch Into the Badlands. It's really badass. Anyways.
what else have you guys seen? Let me go through a couple real quick of mine, because I haven't seen a whole lot.
Yeah, go for it.
First of all, have either of you guys seen, I'm going to fuck the title up, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, the Ted Bundy movie on Netflix? Have either of you guys seen it?
No.
It is, here's the thing with it. It seems like a Lifetime movie about Ted Bundy. And it's from the point of view of his girlfriend while all this was happening. So it doesn't get totally Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer on it. It's not real brutal. It's a pretty tame movie as far as, I mean, if it wasn't about a real life serial killer, it would be, you know, a very tame movie. But Zac Efron kills. He is the best Ted Bundy. It's weird because it's supposed to be, I think that the girlfriend's supposed to be the star of it, but Zac Efron steals every scene. So you kind of want it to be more about the killings than about her filter on it. So it's an interesting one. Anyway, that's extremely shocking. The title is going to work against
it's very
it.
Long.
Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile. There, that's what it's called. And then I also saw The Intruder.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have either of you guys see that?
I haven't, but I've heard interesting things about it.
The Intruder. It's a new movie. It just came out this weekend and got clobbered by Endgame, the second weekend of Endgame. Dennis Quaid he owns this house and he sells it to this black couple. And see, that's the thing. You think it's going to be like a racial thing, like a Get Out. The fact that the couple is black has nothing to do with the movie itself, which is actually kind of cool. It's just like a, you know, you could have plugged a white couple in there and you would have gotten exactly the same movie. So it's actually kind of cool that they did it that way. But so he sells him this house and it's like this palatial mansion in Napa Valley. And then he keeps dropping by to like mow the lawn and help with the Christmas lights and stuff. And he just turns into like a stalker of the people who bought his house. And it's pretty bad. I couldn't tell if I should take it seriously because you can't tell if the movie itself is taking itself seriously. But Dennis Quaid, it's kind of like Zac Efron. Dennis Quaid kills it. He's the he's a great villain. He does creepy really well. And the other big thing I saw, which it's a documentary, but it might be interesting to you, Korea. It's a movie called Hail Satan with a question mark.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Hail Satan with a question mark. And it's basically about the Satanic Temple, not the Church of Satan, the Satanic Temple,
which
is a completely different thing. Yeah.
Well, comically so. Comically so. Because as a Satanist, I am interested in Hail Satan. I am up to date on like what the Satanic Temple does and what the Church of Satan does. And let's just say they don't like each other, especially with the Satanic Temple recently becoming tax exempt. The Church of Satan is very against that. Because the Church of Satan believes that all churches should pay taxes. And even though the Church of Satan has been around for 70 years, they have never gone for tax exemption because they believe that fully. So it's very interesting, but I don't know if I'm interested in Hail Satan, you know?
The Satanic Temple is, they make this comparison themselves in the documentary. They're basically like the Woodsboro Baptist Church, because what they exist to basically call out other religions on their hypocrisy. They're not nearly as confrontational as the Woodsboro Baptist Church. You know, they don't go out there, saying Westboro. Yeah, Woodsboro. Yeah, it's from the movie Scream. You don't remember that part? Yeah, Westboro Baptist. they're not as confrontational as them, but they'll do things like they'll find state capitals where there will be a monument to the Ten Commandments on state ground, so they will go and they'll sue to put a statue of Baphomet right next to it, because they think that all religions should be treated equally in the eyes of the law, which is an admirable stance. Or there's another part where there's some city council in I want to say it's in Phoenix, Arizona, but there's some city council somewhere, it's in Arizona, where they lead a prayer. And it's like non-denominational. They take turns, you know, like one day the Presbyterians will do it, one day the Episcopalians will do it, you know. Well, they got their name on the list. They wanted to lead a satanic prayer. And of course, people freaked out. They're like, oh, no Satan in our government, you know. And so basically, they make no bones about the fact that they're there just to stir shit up. They want to, they're there to prove to other people how Christianity is treated as the American religion when it shouldn't be, you know. I mean, so it's kind of an interesting, you know, it's an interesting documentary,
which brings me to the point, because I do admire that the Satanic Temple does those things. I think it is necessary. I do like that they kind of do it in a dickish way, like going around and basically like being like, oh, you want this? Because they've done programs like in Florida, schools had, they had like a thing where school, they passed a law where all religions could put their literature in elementary schools and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But really they were just putting like Christian shit in all the schools. So the Satanic Temple lobbied for all religions to be able to, so that, you know, everyone could do it. And to prove their point even further on how innocent it would be to have satanic literature in there, they made coloring books that were about how to deal with bullies, and all the coloring scenarios were like how to deal when someone is bullying you, and like the kid would be wearing a pentagram shirt. It was pretty metal.
they showed them starting up an after school program, like in a school that had like a Christian after school program. They started up their satanic after school program. It's, you know, you laugh at it and it's kind of funny, but the point they're trying to make is very valid.
Oh yeah, like, no, I totally agree with them.
Christianity is totally butting its head into government and education and stuff, and they get pissed when someone does it in the name of Satan. Whether or not the Satanic Temple is truly Satan worshipers or not, it is a different kind of Satan worship than, say, Anton LaVey's Church of Satan.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things, too, because even though they are doing a lot of good, there's a lot of stuff. Because I have even attended one of their satanic masses, and it was a lot of fun. But you also...
The Temple of Satan?
For the Satanic Temple, yeah. Okay.
Nice.
But you also have to look a little bit further. And this is the main reason why I haven't seen Hail Satan yet, is it seems too pro what they're doing. Like, it's too kind to them, because they also have famously sued Netflix over the use of a Baphomet statue in their Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. even
that
though
was the Satanic Temple that did that.
That was the Satanic Temple, even though the image of Balfamont is not copyright. I get that their design is, but even their design, if you're a true Satanist, is problematic in some ways.
They show the guy who designed their statue taking bits of Baphomet from other things. So even it is a conglomeration of, but I don't see how they would have a legal leg to stand on unless they took their exact statue.
Yeah. And that, and the other thing with that too is, I know one of the big things that the Church of Satan is against with the Satanic Temple is the fact that one of their lawyers, the Satanic Temple uses, is someone who has connections to the far right. And that's one of the reasons why LA didn't have a Satanic Temple chapter for a while. I still don't think we have an official one here, because that their segment branched off from the Satanic Temple, because while they believed in the overall mission, they didn't like how they were using that man's services, because he was someone who also defended far right people as well. And either, no matter which form of Satanism you're with, you're very anti far right and organizations like that. Satanists are very, very much so about, you know, being kind to one another and being very accepting, because that's who Satan is. He accepts all.
They go over the seven tenets of Satanism in the, and they make perfect sense. Yeah. they list them all off, and they have different members of the church list them all off, and they'll even say stuff like, oh, this is my favorite, you know, and before they say it, they make a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a Satanist, but as far as religions go, I think it's the seven tenets speak to me way more than the Ten Commandments, just because the Ten Commandments to me seem like they should be obvious. Yeah, don't kill anyone, duh. You know, don't cheat on your wife, duh. I mean, why does this need to be written for you? This is just like,
honor thy father.
Yeah, this should be your default state. You don't need Moses coming down off the mountain telling you guys this stuff.
Hey guys,
you know, don't lie.
Crazy idea. How about we not kill people? Just throwing it out there. What do you think?
That's a very radical idea.
Okay, we've devoted too much time to Hail Satan and the Satanic Temple. Let's move on. What have you seen, Jacob?
Well, I was going to say, off of your earlier comment about Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, have either of you guys been watching Joe Bob Briggs' Last Drive-In?
Unfortunately, no. Not yet.
Oh, man, he's been doing some good ones the last couple weeks.
I heard he did Henry, right?
Yeah, he did Henry.
And he apologized for it on, was it Twitter? He actually said something, not a specific, I'm sorry for showing Henry. It was more like a, yeah, I did that.
You know, like. Yeah, that was great. He even had the director on and talked with him. It was very interesting to get that perspective. They've done a lot of cool ones the last couple weeks. My favorite double feature, though, was I think last week he did Demon Wind with House of the Devil.
Ty West's House of the Devil?
Yeah, T. West's House of the Devil.
So you got to see Greta Gerwig get shot in the face.
And how?
And how?
But yeah, and I was just very happy, particularly about Demon Wind, just because more people have gotten exposed to that insanity.
Is Demon Wind your favorite movie of all time, not directed by Panos Cosmatos?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I'd say it's probably my favorite schlock movie. I don't know. It's just the greatest Evil Dead riff. It's just so goddamn bonkers.
It really, I own it. I think I fell asleep halfway through. And again, when I say I fell asleep, it's usually not a testament to whether it's good or bad. I'm just very sleepy.
It's the muscle relaxants.
Yeah,
it's the muscle relaxants.
It's the muscle relaxants. But no, Demon Wind, from what I saw, it's crazy. It's pure schlock. It's pure B movie, and it's weird as shit. Nothing. A lot of things don't make sense, but it's a hell of a fun time. So,
and Lou Diamond Phillips is in it, like.
Yeah,
like, that's the other, because the other thing I love about the Joe Bob Briggs commentary, you know, is that he drops a lot of facts and trivia about the movies he plays. Like, so he's talking about how Lou Diamond Phillips had a cameo in the movie because he was dating one of the crew at the time, or he was married to one of the crew at the time. So he's one of the demons, kind of, you know, in the horde when they attack. But yeah, no, just Joe Bob Briggs' Last Drive-In's a lot of fun and very informative, and I'm glad it's kind of becoming a tentpole the horror community has been uniting around.
And it's on Shudder.
Yep,
in
it's
case,
on Shudder.
In case anybody didn't know that or we didn't say that earlier. Is it every Friday night on Shudder?
Yeah, they're doing it every Friday night, and then the episodes are available to watch on demand the day after.
Now, is this a limited thing, or are they going to do it every Friday night until people start watching? Is it like there's no scheduled end date for it, right?
Not so far as I know. I mean, they're okay. Doing it on a weekly basis. I mean, I'm sure they're going to probably do a break at some point. Maybe they're doing a season like 10 or 13 weeks, 13 episodes. But for now, it's just going and going. Like, it's going to happen next week or the week after.
It's kind of fun to have like an event.
Yeah.
Event TV for the streaming generation.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Maybe we should get someone from the Joe Bob Briggs show on here sometime.
Let's get Joe Bob Briggs on here.
Yeah, I don't know about him, but I know a few people who work on his show.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Yeah, and maybe. And another thing I did that was really cool last week, I was at a 90s horror marathon over at the Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles.
Was that the 16mm one?
Yep, Secret 16mm combined with Friday Night Frights and Voyager Institute. So they did six 90s horror movies. We had no idea what to expect, all on 16mm. And, oh man, it was a great selection, too. People Under the Stairs, William Friedkin's The Guardian, Mimic, and this was probably my favorite of the night just because it was such out of the left field, Ghost in the Machine, followed by Candyman and Halloween H2O 20 years later, which was actually the first time I saw that.
You never saw H2O?
Well, I saw bits and pieces a long time ago, but I never really sat down and watched it. But that was definitely the best way to do it. Like, it was actually better than I expected.
I like H2O. I think H2O... I think it might be my favorite Halloween movie after Halloween and Halloween 2. And then this is before the new Halloween came out.
Right.
I think that might have bumped it down. But, you know, for a long time, I think it was my third favorite Halloween movie. Because I don't consider Halloween 3 a Halloween movie.
Well,
yeah, I mean, it's not part of the...
canon.
Of the timeline.
It's like when you talk about the greatest rock bands of all time, how you kind of have to take Elvis and the Beatles out of the equation. Because it's like, well, obviously they're going to be at the top. They're in a league of their own. Halloween 3 is in a league of its own.
Yeah.
But yeah, H2O, except for The Mask, is definitely one of the best of the Halloween sequels because they fucked up on The Mask.
Yeah,
so
The Mask looked
bad. That one shot where it's CGI.
Yeah, that did not hold up. But Jamie Lee Curtis was great in that. And like I was saying, very happy that they did Ghost in the Machine, which was directed by Rachel Talele, who did Freddy's Dead. Mostly because, it was the most 90s of the 90s horror movies they played that night. Because, you know, you got the kid who's into virtual reality gaming, and it's all about address books and... like computer hackers ruin your life, but it's actually a ghost in the machine.
Wait, it's a ghost? But where is it?
It's in the machine.
It's in the machine.
So it's unfriended then? It was unfriended in the 90s?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of unfriended in the 90s.
Here we thought unfriended was an original concept, but... Yeah,
How is it getting from machine to machine? Via floppy disk.
No, it's using the power of electricity.
Oh, so it was Pulse. It's Pulse meets Unfriended.
Kind of, yeah. It's like a ghost. Oh my god! It's like one of those class. It's like one of those bonkers horror explanations. Because this is why a lot of times it's best to leave these things unexplained. But like, okay, so a serial killer's in a car accident and he's put under an MRI during a lightning storm, and lightning strikes the hospital, and his brain is uploaded onto the interwebs.
See, this is why, folks. You really like if there's a lightning storm, don't have serial killers attached to equipment, because like. You know, I think a similar thing happened in Shocker, right?
Yes, horror
Wasn't
thinker.
He in the electrocution chair and they got struck by lightning too? So, like, guys, just to avoid, you know, electricity-powered serial killers, let's avoid doing stuff during thunderstorms.
yeah, it's a funny movie, but yeah, the horror film was a lot of fun, and it's just it's those types of movies that are just really great with a crowd.
What else is going on? I know that you saw a double feature that is going to take us into the subgenre.
Oh, yes, I'll get into that. Yeah, last night at the New Beverly Cinema, they had a double feature, and they're doing all women-directed movies this month. So they did a horror double feature with Near Dark by Kathryn Bigelow and Jennifer's Body with Karen Kusama and written by Diablo Cody. And it actually was a really good double feature. Like, they kind of played well off each other, and I totally forgot about the Lance Henriksen connection between both movies, because he's got a cameo in Jennifer's Body. And it did feel like, how do I put this? It was a reclaiming of both those movies, because, like, remember, both those movies were kind of panned when they first came out, but it was a completely sold-out show last night, and, like, people who hadn't seen before were really into it and really, really dug it.
Was Near Dark panned when it came out?
I think it was. Or
I always remember loving it, but then again, I am not really the barometer by which they measure movies like that.
Well, I think it was maybe more in a critical or commercial lens, but either way, Jennifer's Body got stomped when it came out, which was very unfair.
Well, I think part of the reason people hated that was Megan Fox. I think she had a reputation for doing bad movies at that point, so people kind of expected it.
I think it was more just
the marketing.
Yeah,
the honestly, yeah, it was the marketing, because, like, the whole marketing was just like, because I remember I finally watched Jennifer's Body not too long ago, and I remember the marketing just being like, Jennifer Fox. It was basically like, look how much naked we get her, you know. It was very male gaze, that marketing. Yep. That's not the film at all. I mean, there's definitely a few, like, skin-showing moments, but, like, it's a completely different film than what was advertised. So it was definitely one of those ones that got killed by word of mouth and people being like, it's not. It's got all these other things.
Yeah, and I was actually talking with a friend last night, and that we both think that one of the problems of Jennifer's Body was that it was so original. Like, you know, think about 2007. Like, it was mostly zombie movies, remakes, all that type of stuff. Like,
Twilight.
Yeah, Twilight. It just kind of broke the mold, so people didn't really know what box to put it in, so just they disregarded it.
Diablo Cody was coming off of Juno.
Yeah.
So her name attached to the script is like, well, is she going to be able to do horror? You know, she just did this, you know, lighthearted family, like Juno's lighthearted, but, you know, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that kind of hinders it too, because, like, you can tell Diablo was trying to do that, like, kind of quirky talk with stuff sometimes in Jennifer's Body, like trying to do that, like, Juno, like, I said a quirky word that usually doesn't mean that. And, like, with Juno, I guess it works. Juno's got its fans. I'm not one of them. But with Jennifer's Bodies, like, I would be into it. And then all of a sudden they do that, like, hip talk thing that Diablo Cody was known for at the time. And, like, it was just very cringy in that context.
I thought it worked pretty well with Jennifer's Body last night. And also, like, what a cast, you know, because you got Amanda Seyfried, J.K. Simmons.
My boy Adam Brody.
Yeah, Adam Brody, Low Shoulder.
Yeah,
those guys kind of stole the show. But either way, yeah, both those movies were great. And I guess this will segue into the subgenre of the week or bi-week with Near Dark. I want to, you know, just because after seeing that again last night, I felt like this would be a cool topic to bring up. Horror westerns, you know. Combining, personally, perhaps my two favorite genres, horror and westerns, and it's kind of interesting the movies that can fall under that umbrella.
Yeah, because some are straight up westerns that have horror elements, like Bone Tomahawk. You know, that was a western movie that quickly dived into horror in the third act very suddenly.
Mm. Yeah, and on Near Dark, you know, it was a Western in the 80s and with vampires. Although they don't... Although it's funny, I realized they don't use the V word even once in Near Dark. They just say they're changed or they're different. You know, they don't like, paint a picture. And, yeah, and that one's pretty cool, too, because it's basically a horror Western and... You know, Lance Henriksen and the gang are basically typical black hat, you know, Western villains. Like, they ride into town, and instead of robbing places, though, they just, like, eat people. And, you know, I just want to go into that. Like, it's such a great crew they have, too, because, well, you got Lance Henriksen as Jesse, the leader, and you got Janet Goldstein as his girl, and... and of course, Bill fucking Paxton as Severin.
Bill,
like,
basically,
Paxton.
Catherine Bigelow took James Cameron's Aliens cast,
yeah,
and made a movie
where they're vampires.
Well, and also, if you see Near Dark, you can't imagine it with any other cast. So whether she purposely took his Aliens cast or not, you know, she did it right, because, you know, that whole cast kills.
Oh, extremely so. And Adrian Pasdar as Caleb, the lead guy, I feel like he did a really good job. But again, you know, just gotta go back to Bill Paxton, because, like, Bill Paxton just had such a magnetism to it. It's like every time he appears, like, he psychically draws the camera to himself. Like, you can't take your eyes off him. And with Severin, like, the character, like, he really gets to shine because he just hams it up so much, and he's, like, psychotic and evil, but so charismatic.
When it comes to horror westerns, for me personally, I like the ones that are more subtle, where you don't even realize they're horror movies until you get to the third act, like The Beguiled, which both versions of it, the Clint Eastwood and the Colin Farrell, because it's like you don't realize that this guy is, you know, manipulating his situation until, you know, it hits the wall and, you know, you see what sticks. It's a, you know, movies like, or like a, or like The Keeping Room. Either you guys see The Keeping Room? Keeping Room is about three women who, it's similar to The Beguiled. All the men on their plantation went off to fight the Civil War. It's basically a home invasion movie, because a couple of rogue soldiers come in and try to invade, and they have to fight them off of their plantation. So it's, you know, there's a whole lot of fighting and shooting and stabbing and attempted raping and, you know, stuff like that. But it's one of those, you know, you think it's just, oh, you know, these three women are going to defend their, and then, you know, it goes to some dark places.
Yeah, keep that in mind.
And those are also the same ones that make me want to see a bona fide horror movie from Quentin Tarantino, because he's done things like Django Unchained or Hateful Eight, where they're like legit Westerns, but there's just enough horror in them where I'm like, okay, you didn't quite, although Hateful Eight, I will argue, because it turns into a Tales from the Crypt episode with its third act.
It even uses cues from The Thing.
Yeah, and it had a song from Last House on the Left played in it too, so yeah, he knew what he was doing with that.
And with Django Unchained, one of my favorite trivia bits about that was, like, Leonardo DiCaprio said his biggest inspiration for his character in that, Calvin Candy, or his performance in that, was Vincent Price.
Yeah,
I can see it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And in terms of recent movies, there was actually this one I caught at Beyond Fest last year that's gotten a more major release recently, called The Wind. Have you guys seen that or heard of that?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard really good things.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, it was so good. Because it's not a typical horror Western, and it's not even really a typical Western, but basically it's a period movie set in, like, the late 19th century about these settlers who are going out west and are just out in the plains, so, like, there's literally nothing out there, just this cottage, and then these other settlers come in and they build a house, so it's just these two couples, and Well, without spoiling too much, like things start to go bad, and the husband has to go out to the city to get supplies, and the woman's all by herself, and she can hear the wind, and she starts to go crazy because you know the isolation and their situation is like crushing her under the pressure, and so it's kind of those things where you can't quite tell if what she's seeing is real or if she's going nuts. And apparently, it was based off of real incidents where settlers out on the prairie, you know, the isolation and the journey was so much on them that they went insane.
Did we talk about this when we did our episode with Kelly? I feel like Kelly might have been telling us about this. She might have seen it at TIFF.
This
sounds super familiar, and I feel like we talked about it like in this setting, but I think Kelly was the one telling us about
I think it played at TIFF, so there's a pretty good chance.
What other horror westerns we want to talk about before we move on?
Well, two that I definitely want to bring up, because one I think isn't talked about enough, and that's From Dusk Till Dawn 3.
Yeah,
because I really I love the From Dusk Till Dawn trilogy, and it's one of the few like direct-to-video sequels, the second and third one, that I actually really enjoy. I think for a spell, I thought I liked the third one more, but like the first two, like definitely play with a lot of like the Western tropes and setups and stuff like that. But then the third one just full blown goes, nope, we're going back into the past, and we're basically redoing the first. What happens in the first movie just in a Western setting, and it's a lot of fun. And so if anyone ever gets a chance to, I think you can get the From Dusk Till Dawn like 4 movie set with Full Tilt Boogie for like real cheap on Blu-ray. It's definitely worth checking out. A lot of fun. Danny Trejo is in all 3 of them, which just makes it even better. And then but also Assault on Precinct 13, the original. Like,
oh yeah,
I would argue that it is a horror western because
it's a siege movie, and was it Rio Bravo?
Yeah, it was inspired by Rio Bravo.
Yeah, yeah, Carpenter said Rio Bravo and Night of the Living Dead were his two big inspirations, and you can see them both.
And it totally works that way because the whole setup is Rio Bravo. We're hunkered down. We have someone they want to kill, and they're trying to get in here. But also how he treats the gang members in coming in are total zombie-like. And that's one of the reasons why I love that movie, because it's definitely one of those movies that you can go back and rewatch it with a different perspective almost every time and get a completely different experience. So you can go back and watch it like it's a zombie movie, or you can go back and watch it as a Western, or you can go back and watch it as like a gang, cops and robbers type, you know, deal.
Or you can watch it as just a vehicle for that amazing soundtrack.
Ugh. It's one of the greatest soundtracks of all time.
And also, like, I'd argue, like, I'm not sure the first half, but the first bit is like one of the most intense, where like the 4 gang leaders of Street Thunder, like, because the cops killed a bunch of their guys, they're gonna go like just on a killing spree, and like they're going around town, and like the blonde guy is just aiming at random passerbyers, and the whole thing with the ice cream truck and the girl, holy shit.
Yeah.
Carpenter breaking rules way back then. He killed a kid.
Yeah, you know who else killed kids? Everyone forgets this, but Steven Spielberg killed a child in Jaws. You know, everyone's they're like, I don't want to. I've worked with people that when we discuss the creative process and what we want to do with horror, they always go, I don't want to kill a kid. I went, fuck that. Spielberg did it.
Well, Hitchcock did it too. He killed a kid on a bus with a bomb, and he took a lot of crap for that. But he's like, oh, how else do you want me to do that?
And don't forget the blob.
Oh yeah, the blob eats all.
I got one more. Tremors and Tremors 4 specifically. Well, yeah, all Tremors, but I feel like 1 and 4 kind of the big ones in the Western genre, because first one, of course, you know, is a classic because it's B movie. You know, like there are these giant man-eating worms that can sense you by sound going around Perfection, Nevada, and and it is kind of Western because it's like them circling in, and it's about kind of the townsfolk having to rally together to try and escape or fight them off. And then you got Tremors 4, which is a prequel set in the town's beginnings, and it features Michael Gross's character, his great-great-grandfather.
Who looks just like him, of course.
Yeah, who's played by him and looks exactly like him. You know, trying to deal with apparently like the worms were there beforehand. And one of my favorite bits, though, is that he hires like Clint Eastwood Eastwood type gunslinger to try and take on the Graboids, and they even use like a bunch of kind of Wild West era weaponry, like as they decide to bring out a Gatling gun at one point to try and kill them.
Hell, so both Django really style.
Although, again, I think all of them are really great and fall under, you know, kind of those Western tropes, but mixed in with giant sandworm monsters.
Which, you know, horror Westerns have to have horror in there somewhere.
Indeed.
Yeah,
indeed.
Let's move on to our topic, which is something we kind of touched on this at the end of last year, but we're getting into the summer. And there are a lot of cool movies coming out this summer that we want to talk about because they're all hitting within, you know, the same few months. We're going to talk about movies that are coming out this summer.
The summer blockbuster season is in full effect thanks to Endgame, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the movies that you guys are super looking for? I'm going to go first because...
Because
I've already talked about mine enough, and it also might only be tangentially horror, but Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's Manson movie is coming out, I think, in July. We have a running time for it. It's 2 hours and 45, which, you know, is not exactly the 3+ of Endgame, but that's a, you know, I mean, I guess we expect that from Tarantino now, but that's kind of the only news we have on that since probably the last time we've talked about it. So I'm just going to say,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say I'm super excited for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because, you know, QT can really do no wrong in my book. So what are you guys excited for?
Crawl.
Oh,
sorry.
Yes.
I needed to get in here quick before anyone else brings it up. Crawl, man. I knew nothing about this movie. Like, I don't know how it was not on my radar, but Alexander Aja making a hurricane alligator. Is it alligators or crocodiles?
Alligators.
Okay. I get the two confused, you know. I don't know who to see later and who in a while. So. But holy shit. Like, that was not on my radar. I think I might have, like, read something before about him doing something like that, but then it just, like, completely dropped off. Then they dropped that trailer earlier this week.
Yeah.
And all I could think of besides, wow, this looks like it'll be a lot of fun in theaters, is how much that must have sucked filming it. Because it's so claustrophobic and, like, everything's underwater the entire time. Like, I feel bad for that crew.
And produced by Sam Raimi.
Yeah, Sam Raimi produced it too, which I'm glad to see his name back on stuff. Hoping maybe this means Sam Raimi might be getting back into horror.
Hopefully.
Please,
but yeah, Sam. Yeah, no, I'm stoked for that, too.
Didn't he have a hand in the Evil Dead remake, though, as a producer?
Yeah, of course,
so
of course.
He never really left horror. He's always one of us.
But he hasn't really done a whole lot besides since that, because he did the Oz, Great and Powerful, and then he directed the series premiere and produced Ash vs. the Evil Dead. But outside of that, he hasn't made a film, and I just want him to do another original, like Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
What are you looking forward to, Jacob?
Okay, well, my big one, and say the biggest one, has to be Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, holy shit. Yeah, I mean, that IMAX trailer before Endgame, my God.
Yes. Oh, so much King Ghidorah.
I'm so pumped. Like, because, you know, it's Michael Dougherty, and I actually saw him at Monsterpalooza, and that dude gets Godzilla and, you know, all the kaiju and stuff, just because, you know, he's basically, you know, he's not treating Godzilla and the other monsters just giant monsters. These are primordial gods who are coming back, like the old gods return. It's very Lovecraftian. And, like, this is, and I mean, I'm just pumped that we're getting a Godzilla movie with a crazy big budget, because, you know, I love the original movies and stuff, but just to see, you know, with modern technology and with such a huge budget, like, just how massively scaled they're able to do these movies, because you got I'm expecting big battle between Godzilla, King Ghidorah, Mothra, Rodan, and also I'm just personally really happy that they're going to be crushing my hometown of Boston. I consider it an honor, because, like, in the trailer you can see like Fenway Park getting smashed.
Godzilla versus the Green Monster.
Yeah, but no, I'm stoked about that. I'm seeing it on the biggest IMAX screen I possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
That's how Godzilla movies have to be seen.
I want to see that at the Chinese theater. Like, I'm willing to not use my AMC pass and we'll drop 30 bucks to see that and on that screen. Because if you're ever in LA and you get to see a movie at the in IMAX at the Chinese theater, do it.
The big one that I'm excited about, and this appeals to the guy in me who loved Greta, is Ma.
Oh, yeah.
The Octavia Spencer, basically, I mean, I've accidentally seen trailers for it, and I love them. You know, this older black lady befriends this group of white kids who want to party and just goes stalker on them. And I think it's going to be, I'm hoping that Octavia Spencer sinks her teeth into that role the same way that Isabelle Huppert did into Greta. And I hope that she realizes what kind of movie she's making and just has fun with it. I'm hoping it's a little more successful than The Intruder is basically what I'm dancing around right now.
Yeah.
Because even Dennis Quaid having that kind of a performance in The Intruder didn't save the movie. But I'm hoping that I'm hoping Ma is better.
Like, on a scale of Nicolas Cage, how would you say how intense that performance was?
Of Dennis Quaid, he's probably a 7. he's the only one in the movie who understands that he's in a horror movie. Everyone else is in like a Lifetime Presents drama, you know, a Hallmark drama. So it's a little tame, except when the camera hits Dennis Quaid. What else are we excited for this summer?
Brightburn.
Yes, I was Brightburn, just about to say yes. That.
I was going to say we're in the midst of like superheroes dominating everything, of course, and they have for like what fucking 10 years now, at least. And so it's cool to see like that. Just Brightburn just sounds like fun. I mean, you kind of see you already. All you have to say is it's evil Superman. Like that sounds cool enough.
It sounds fun, but it also sounds dark.
Oh, yeah. Extremely so.
It looks like it's going to be, it almost seems like it's going to be more of a super villain origin story. And they it's almost like the final scene is going to have Bruce Willis, you know, stepping out of the shadows to fight him.
One of my favorite comments about that, because I've seen like the trailer get posted in a bunch of groups on social media and all this stuff, was someone said, Do we have to see a superhero movie like that? I'd like to see a different take on that. And I'm like, a different take on an alien crash landing in the Midwest and getting superpowers? The different take is Superman. We've seen that movie. We've seen that story. Like, this is the different take on that.
What else are we excited for? Jacob, what's next on your excitement meter?
The Dead Don't Die from Jim Jarmusch.
That's on my list too. I'm excited about that because what he did you see Only Lovers Left Alive?
Oh hell yeah, I did.
I'm hoping, because I'm so tired of zombies, I'm hoping The Dead Don't Die will do for the zombie genre what Only Lovers Left Alive did for vampires. Because I was tired of vampires back then too. So.
Yeah, I trust Jim Jarmusch. He's again, you know, he's very good at subverting tropes, or you know, playing around with kind of these more typical type of stories. And I mean, just dear God, the cast he got for this. Like, let me read this. Okay, he's got Adam Driver, Bill Murray, Tilda Swinton, Selena Gomez, Carol Kane, Danny Glover, Iggy Pop, and it says there's even more. So it's just like he always assembles these great ensemble casts.
Well, he's Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah, I mean, but that he got them for a zombie movie. I mean, it looks like a zombie comedy because it's about these small town cops that are dealing with kind of a zombie apocalypse. And yeah, I thought the trailer was really funny. So I'm interested in seeing the full product because I imagine it's going to be really wacky or crazy.
What about you, Korea? What's next on your list of?
I have a couple, one of which I know it's premiering at Cannes. So I don't know if it will count because we don't have like a U.S. release date, I don't think. But The Lighthouse, which is directed by Robert Eggers, who did the phenomenal Witch a couple years ago. That's going to premiere this year, but I don't know if it's coming out this year. But that still just looks absolutely fantastic, and I'm very excited. Even though know almost nothing about it except for that, like maybe one picture of William Dafoe and Robert Pattinson both having amazing facial hair. in black and white, but very excited for that.
Yeah, it did mention like sea monsters, or like I think they said, you know, from the time of sea monsters. So I am interested in seeing like where it goes with that, because it does sound like it's going to be kind of an aqua horror thing, or it's going to be kind of like old school like sea monster sailor stories.
Speaking of next movies from guys who had a big hit, Midsommar is coming out this summer, which is the new movie from Ari Aster, who blew us all away with Hereditary. So hopefully, I mean, I'm trying to avoid as much about that as possible, which is another reason why I'm not talking to, I actually unfollowed one of iHorror's big competitors, because they kept freaking spoiling stuff. I mean, they spoiled the big twist to Pet Sematary, but they also posted a picture that I think is a spoiler for Midsommar. So I'm like, oh, you know what? It's too risky. I'm unfollowing this particular, so I'm not going to call him out by name, but people who also follow them probably know, because they've had this stuff spoiled for them too.
Right.
But from what I get, Midsommar is like a
folk horror.
Yeah. It's like a cult, kind of like a Wicker Man kind of a deal going on. Which, hey, that's all I need to know, and I'll be there.
I mean, it's got that great setup. It's like about I think American backpackers going to some kind of heart season festival in like rural Norway, I think it was Norway. The trailer really hooked me, because it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, it has that weird montage, and I don't even know like what context to put some of the shots that were in there, but it definitely looks like, you know, like going off of Hereditary, it's going to be some wild shit.
I just had my headphones off because I didn't want to hear any of that, because I'm trying to avoid it. So,
oh, I didn't say anything. I just said I saw. It looks
okay, I don't know what you said. I just know when you stopped talking, I put them back on.
I didn't say any details.
It just looks like a lot of fun. In the trailer, they didn't show a whole lot, so I'm going in there pretty blind. So I'm very happy to be doing that.
We've also got a couple of cool sequels coming out this summer. One is The Boy 2, Brahms, The Boy 2.
I didn't even know about this. They made a sequel.
I'm not sure if I could say I'm excited for that so much as I am curious, because I didn't hate The Boy. I hated where it ended up, which anybody who's seen it knows exactly. It ended up something that you've seen a million times before. In fact, if you didn't see Endgame this past weekend, you may have seen a movie where that ended up in the same place that we've talked about here, but I'm not going to spoil anything else. I'm more curious than I should say excited. But we've also, and this one I actually am excited about, Annabelle Comes Home, because we talked about it last week when we were talking about the Conjuring universe. Annabelle Comes Home, I saw the trailer for it accidentally again, because I was seeing, I think, La Llorona. It looks really good. It looks like it's going to delve more into the Warrens, into their little room of artifacts kind of a thing. Yeah. So it looks fun.
I do like cursed artifact horror, so I do think it's cool that they'll play around with like that kind of vault of cursed artifacts. Then, because maybe they won't just use Annabelle. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they always have like some other horror thing or character appear that they eventually spin off into. So who knows? But speaking of sequels, one that I'm actually kind of looking forward to is 47 Meters Down, Uncaged.
Yes,
because I enjoyed the first one. I mean, I didn't love it, but it was pretty inventive.
It was no The Shallows, but it was still pretty cool as far as shark horror goes.
Yeah, but they've got a pretty interesting hook with this new one, because it's about a group of friends who dive in an underwater city. Underwater ruins, but it turns out that it's a nesting ground for a bunch of sharks. So now they're stuck in underwater in an underground city surrounded by sharks. So I think that's just a pretty interesting angle.
Yes, it is.
And of course, we got at long last It Chapter 2.
Yes. Is that coming out? Is that this summer? I thought this was October.
Technically, September 6th. I mean, yeah, I can't believe it's been like 2 years since It.
It Chapter 2 is going to be, I mean, I cannot wait to see what they do with that cast that they assemble. I mean, it's
such
just
an
so,
amazing cast.
Yeah. I'm surprised that none of us have mentioned Child's Play yet.
Oh, yeah.
I saw, also with La Llorona, I saw a trailer for that. And I'm more skeptical after seeing the trailer, because it almost sounds like they're going to go the way of like, almost like we're talking about Ghost in the Machine. It sounds like they're going to go the way of like Chucky is controlling Alexa and saying, and every aspect of your smart home is going to be affected by Chucky.
Yeah, that I did not expect, but honestly, I'm interested in seeing how that plays out. I mean, it's kind of neat. Yeah, and I think it's cool that Mark Hamill's doing the voice.
If it can't be Brad Dourif, it may as well be someone like Mark Hamill.
Yeah, which is funny because he did do Chucky's voice on a couple of parodies on Robot Chicken.
Okay. That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And also, we're just stoked to see Aubrey Plaza do a straight-up horror movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, she's the mom.
It is a little weird that she's playing moms now. Like, for me, growing up, being around her age, I'm like, fuck yeah, we are getting to that age, aren't we?
Yeah, but either way, I feel like we should at least give the movie a chance.
Oh yeah, I'm absolutely going to give it a chance.
Especially their marketing after that poster.
I was going to say their marketing is pretty genius.
Oh,
you
my
think
God,
it's a Toy Story poster,
yes,
and
oh
then you get
God.
To the second one.
That's the thing. If you look at the poster they released for Toy Story 4, it's the exact same design. Like, yeah. I've seen side-by-side comparisons, and I was like, holy shit, that's genius.
Yeah.
So that alone has me pumped.
Yeah, they've been pretty clever with that, I'll give them.
What, anything else we're excited about before we
Yeah, there's actually a couple of anthology horror movies I'm looking forward to that are coming this summer.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
Oh, yes, of
Is
course.
Is that summer?
That's coming out this summer in August. Cool. Yeah, pretty excited about that. Again, you know, Guillermo del Toro's handling it, and... Yeah, I mean, those scary stories to tell in the dark are still really scary. The previews they showed look pretty terrifying, too. Like, they showed, you know, Harold, the evil scarecrow, and that one really freaked me out as a kid. So now I'm like, well, hello again, childhood terror.
And I think they gave hints to the toe as well.
Yeah.
That one fucked with my head really bad. When I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of more towards kids, but I think they're doing PG-13, but honestly, I feel like this is something any horror fan should be able to enjoy.
There's nothing wrong with PG or PG-13 horror films in my book. Like, you don't, because generally with art, it's because of sex and blood, and with horror, you don't need that. Just really good tension.
And a toe.
Yeah.
And the other big horror anthology I'm looking forward to is Nightmare Cinema, which has a bunch of different directors on that. You got Mick Garris, Joe Dante, David Slade, Ryuhei Kitamura, and Alejandro Bruges. And Mickey Rourke plays a sinister projectionist and shows people like these horrors in his Nightmare Cinema. So
is that getting a theatrical release? That sounds like something that would go straight to like Shudder.
It doesn't say. I mean, it might get theatrical, or at least, you know, indie theatrical, but it's definitely going to be hitting VOD and stuff like that. But either way, it's got a great pedigree, so I'm interested in checking it out.
That sounds like the kind of thing that they're at the Masters of Horror dinner and they're like, oh, you know what we should do?
Yeah. I mean, exactly, it's the Masters of Horror.
Who's in? Raise your hands. And then alright, is that, have we covered the summer? We probably forgotten something.
There's a lot of stuff that's coming to Netflix too. You got Eli, Through the Tall Glass, or Grass, I believe, which is In the Tall Grass, which is another Stephen King adaptation coming to Netflix as well. You know, this is going to be a good summer for horror, I believe. There's a lot of good titles coming out, both theatrically and also streaming. Not to mention, Shudder's always adding dope new things every week.
Mm-hmm.
So, no reason to be outside this year, guys.
Yeah, who needs the sun when you can have horror movies?
Yeah, because the best time to spend your inside is the summer.
Yeah, because it's too damn hot outside.
All right, let's get out of here. If we've forgotten something that you're looking forward to this summer, let us know, because you can do that. You can find us on Facebook at the Eye on Horror Facebook page or the iHorror Facebook page. Our music is Restless Spirit, so check them out. And our artwork is Chris Fisher, so check him out. Me, James J. Edwards, you can find on Twitter at Cinema Fierite. That's like Verite, but Fierite, so it's F-E-A-R-I-T-E. Where can we find you guys on Twitter, Jacob?
You can find me at Jacob Davison _. That is at J-A-C-O-B-D-A-V-I-S-O-N _.
Korea, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on the social medias like Twitter and Instagram at Korean Barbecue. That's CorreanBBQ. Don't forget to check out our Facebook. iHorror is on Twitter too. iHorror at iHorror News and Stardust.
Yeah, Stardust. One of these days I'll get re-set up on Stardust because I got kicked off it.
Yeah, I think if too many people are on it, we get kicked off.
I think it was it had been so long since I did anything on it, which, you know, hey, that's me being lazy or busy or, you know,
both.
Whatever. Yeah. A little of column A and a little of column B. All right. We're going to get out of here. So let us know what you're looking for this summer if we missed it, and have a good summer at the movies, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. For me, James J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
And I'm Jonathan Correa.
Keep your eye on horror.